welcome back. And congratulations, you're almost halfway through Personal Power, and you're taking additional time out on the weekend to listen and improve yourself even more. I'm impressed. Seriously, this is day 13 for most of you. Now, I know some of you have waited to the end of the program to listen to this, and that's okay too, because this was a bonus tape. And as I shared with you yesterday, this bonus session is on, I think, the most important subject of all. And that is, how do you really make sure that after all this work, all this effort, all this success in your life, you're really happy? You really feel fulfilled. And so this introduction to something we call the six human needs, I think, is perfectly placed for you, especially if you just did the goal setting workshop, because we want to make sure we take away any fear that, yeah, well, what if I achieve all that and I'm still not happy? This will show you how to make sure you never have that fear, and more importantly, that you enjoy your life right now, not someday when you achieve these goals. You really experience it today. Also, as I said yesterday, this will introduce you to what our future might be like. For example, at the end of these 30 days, if you'd like, you can join me for my monthly audio magazine, Power Talk, and that's really what you're going to be introduced to in a moment. You're going to get a sample of one of my current Power Talks, but I selected this one in particular because I wanted this updated edition of Personal Power, which we call Personal Power 2, the driving force, to share with you this cutting-edge technology so you could use it immediately. But also, as you listen, you may decide, hey, I'd love to continue my program with Tony at the end of 30 days, and if you order it right away, hopefully it'll arrive before you end the 30-day program, so you'll have continuity to continue from then on. Plus, I do want to mention to you that each month you not only receive a tape from me, so instead of one tape a day, you get one of those a month, but you also get a second tape from me where I interview someone that I personally respect, someone who's coached me personally to improve my life. So there's some real magic here, and I hope you'll decide to continue with me. And at the end of this tape, I'll give you our 1-800 number if you'd like to continue. But for right now, I'm giving you this tape because I want you to really apply this today. So have some fun. Find out why you really do what you do, why other people really do what they do, and how to make sure you can set up the game of life so you can win. That's what this is all about. So let me introduce you to a friend of mine, Tony Robbins. An introduction to Power Talk with the subject of the six human needs. Here we go. Welcome to another edition of, you guessed it, Power Talk. You know, so much of the 1980s was all about, how do I achieve? How do I make it happen? How do I accomplish the goal? And you know, I had the unique privilege of achieving a lot myself, along with a lot of people that I had the opportunity to spend time with. But what I'm seeing in all the people around me in the 90s is this deep yearning for fulfillment. That, you know, movement is not enough anymore. Achievement is not enough anymore. That there's got to be something there at a deep level, on an emotional level, on a spiritual level, if you will, that gives us that feeling that we're all yearning for. And that we have at moments, but maybe we don't capture as much as we'd like. So we want to talk about, what is it that causes people to be fulfilled? And what causes us not to be fulfilled? We want to find out what's the difference between what I would call leverage and drive. So let me give you a little background. The last 18 months have been absolutely amazing. I am so grateful to God for the life that I have, both the challenges and the opportunities. In the last 18 months, to give you an idea, I've had the privilege of working with Princess Di, the President of the United States, with a variety of sports figures and helping them make turnarounds, everyone from Andre Agassi, the Los Angeles Kings, which went to the Stanley Cup, to give you an idea, for the San Antonio Spurs. I've gotten a chance to work with one of the top financial traders on the face of the earth, a man who made $500 million in a day. Pretty brilliant guy, as you might guess. But he ran into trouble and he lost money for 8 straight months. And I had the privilege of being called in to do a turnaround on him, and it started me on a whole nother level of coaching that this whole Power Talk really came out of. And that is, this person offered me a percentage of his improvement if I would come in. He offered me a minimum of $1 million to come and coach him. And I thought, wow, that's a pretty amazing offer. What can I really do? And I used all of the tools that we have here, as well as the tools that I teach at Master University, A Date with Destiny, the tools for understanding what changes the way we make decisions. Because this man was making decisions that were costing him an immense amount of money and time and emotion and frustration. And he knew what to do. He just wasn't doing it. He couldn't get himself to follow through. So I began to model him. And in modeling him, I learned so much, not only about him, but about all of us, about what drives us, about what makes us succeed, and more importantly, what makes us either fulfilled or unhappy once we have succeeded. Because in this man's case, I went out and I read every book about him. I read every interview that was ever done when he was at his best to find out what were the financial principles that were governing his decisions, but also what were the emotions that were shaping them. Because no matter what you do in life, whether you're hitting a baseball as a professional major leaguer, or you're doing something like going out and working on computers, and you're creating songs or music or writing books, or you're designing corporations, or you're constantly figuring out how to debate a legal issue and be effective, there is an emotional side to everything you and I do. And it's a component that most of us try to ignore because we're just trying to get the job done. But it's the part that not only fulfills us, but fuels us as people. And unless you understand that fuel, unless you understand that drive, then you'll always be looking to get a short-term burst of energy through discipline or focus, but you'll never be in that place of just flow, where it just happens, where it's just automatic, where you surprise yourself, where you say, this is magical. This is what life's about. I love this. We've all had moments like that. And I want to share with you the secret of how to have them all the time. All the time? Yeah, all the time. So that when you're not in that state, you know exactly what to do to get back in that target zone where you are your best, where you contribute the most you can contribute, and where you feel the greatest juice of life on a consistent basis, not a spotty, hope it comes back kind of basis. See, part of what it is intellectual. It's part of it is understanding the goal of the game of life. It's pretty hard to win the game of life when you don't know what the goal is, and most of us don't. We think we know what it is, and then we achieve the goal, and we say, is this all there is? And we've all had this conversation before, right? But I got a new answer for you. An answer that when you get it, it'll change your life forever if you'll use it. But in the case of this man, it was not just about making him fulfilled. It was also figuring out strategically, what was he doing differently? What was he doing? How was he making decisions? How was he evaluating 40 or 50 different markets around the world? Understanding what's going on in commodities and trades and interest rates. It was extraordinary learning on my part, and I had to learn an immense amount about all those things, but I'll tell you something. The changes, he started making money from the very first month I was with him, and he made almost $180 million during my 18-month tenure with him. And so those distinctions had a visceral benefit for him and an economic benefit for him. But it started me on a track of starting to coach people individually, and I added that to the distinctions I've been making in Date with Destiny and some really fundamental tools, some fundamental understandings began to change the quality of what I was doing to another level. I'll give you one other example. After coaching him, people started seeing the result, and they said, hey, this guy's worth at least $1 to $4 million. I'd like him to coach me once a week. I'd like him to come see me once a month. So all of a sudden, I had all these wonderful offers. So I received a phone call from a gentleman who really wanted me to work with him. And he was in the south of France. And so I said, well, why don't we wait till I come there to do my program there? I was doing a Date with Destiny in Cannes. And so I got to the program, and some interesting things had occurred in my life. And I was not in a happy state. I was feeling very frustrated, and I couldn't figure out why exactly. And in a few moments, when I share a little more, you'll understand the why. But all of a sudden, I was not myself. You ever been in that place? You don't understand why. You just don't feel good. You don't feel like you're yourself, but you're not sure why. Well, I was kind of in that place, and the final note for me is I had this opportunity to be with this man, this amazing guy, and I wasn't sure I wanted to do it. He's willing to pay me a fortune. I still didn't know if I wanted to do it. I lost my drive. I mean, I couldn't remember ever being like that. I don't know if you've ever been in that place where you're just disturbed with yourself. But I think it's a good place, by the way. It doesn't feel good, but it is good. You know, I've learned in life that there are four classes of experience, I think. I thought of this on a run recently. I said, class one experience in life is something that feels good. It is good for you. It is good for others, and it serves the greater good. Those are the peak experiences in life, aren't they? I'll tell you what a class two experience is. Something that does not feel good, right? Does not feel good, but is good for you. Is good for other people and serves the greater good. Those are the ones most people want to avoid, but those are the secret to a joyous, successful, and fulfilling life. Class three experience? Something that feels good, but is not good for you, is not good for others, and does not serve the greater good. And this is the crap you do on a regular basis, isn't it? At least I know I've been guilty of this in the past. And here's a class four experience. Something that does not feel good, is not good for you, does not serve others, and does not serve the greater good. So why the heck would we do it? Fear or just old habits, patterning. And these are the worst things of all. I'll tell you what I think the secret to a successful, happy, fulfilling life is. It's learning how to convert class two experiences into class one experiences. Learning how to take those things that don't feel good, but really are good for you, really serve others, good for others, and really serve the greater good, and making them a class one, where it also feels good to do those things that are good for you, good for others, and serve the greater good. So here I was doing something that didn't feel good, but it really could serve the greater good. It certainly would serve this other person. It would serve me because, listen, for me to coach someone else, I learn. I'm the one who gets the greatest gift, regardless of economics. The real challenge, the real ability is figuring out how to turn something around. And whatever I learn, I can apply to my own life. But I thought, why do I keep doing this? And I kept thinking, you know, I'm seeing the same problems in people all over the face of the earth. In that seminar, there were people representing 28 nations. They'd all flown in to see me. And I'm reading them. And everybody's got the same basic problems worldwide. In fact, I said, you know what? There aren't that many problems. There's probably only about a dozen problems. So I took out a piece of paper and I started writing out what I call the dirty dozen, the 12 problems. And I'm not going to tell you what they are now because I'm going to save those for another power talk. Make sure you're still listening in on me. You don't bail after one little tape here. But I will tell you this. I got in the shower and I kept thinking, but why do people have these same problems worldwide? I don't care if it's a total top professional athlete. I don't care if it's this multi-billionaire that I work with. I don't care if it's a child in the South Bronx. I don't care if it's a person from India, from China, a person from Singapore. I don't care if it's from Australia, England, you know, France, Italy. I don't care. The U.S., you know, any place I've gone in the world, any place people have come to me, I see the same problems. So I got in the shower. Don't you ever notice how the most important things come to you when you're in the shower and there's no paper pencil nearby? I'm in the shower. I got soap in my eyes. I'm just at that moment. All of a sudden, wham, this stuff starts coming through me. Well, I've got the answer. My brain just goes, here's the answer. Here's the answer to why everybody does whatever they do. Here's the answer as to why everybody has the same problems. Here's what it is. So I jumped out of the shower and I couldn't find the towel to soap in my eyes. I'm dripping wet. I'm running outside, running around naked, looking for a piece of paper. I got a pen. I start scribbling like crazy. I sat there for the next hour and a half writing. I couldn't stop writing. And my wife came in, looking at me all sopping wet. The couch is soaked, right? The towel spread out someplace else. She said, what is the matter with you? I said, I've got it. Eureka, I've got it. And I really got it. She goes, you got what? I said, I got the answer. I got a whole nother level of answer. And I call it the six human needs. I began to realize, it started like this. I'm in the shower, my brain said, same problems worldwide. But all these people in different parts of the world have different belief systems. They've grown up in different cultures. There are different rules, right? They have different backgrounds, different experiences. How could they have the same problems? And I thought, is it possible? Because all human beings have the same needs. And well, that would make sense. I thought, but why would they have the same problems? And I began to ask myself the question, is it possible that these needs are inherently in conflict? And that's why we have the challenge. I thought, nah, God wouldn't do that to us. I thought, no, it'd make life more interesting. Probably make us have to grow more. Probably make us try to figure things out. Let me play with this. And then all of a sudden, this started coming through me. So let me just give it to you with no more buildup. You're saying, give it to me, Tony. What is it? Tell me. Here it is. There are six human needs. These are so simple, but pay attention and listen. You got a piece of paper, you might write them down. First human need. This is not a desire, by the way, before I tell you. This is not a request. This is not something you want. This is the need that all human beings have. And that is, number one, the need for certainty. The need that we can be certain that we can be comfortable. The most fundamental need is certainty that we can avoid pain and gain pleasure. This is our survival need in essence, isn't it? But I want you to hear that word, certainty. We did a power talk all about certainty and uncertainty. I hope you listened to it. But I'll tell you something, this is a humongous need. This is one of the most fundamental needs that human beings have to have just to be able to live their life. I mean, think about this for a moment. Have you ever had a moment in your life when you felt like you had total uncertainty, like you had no idea what was going to happen and it freaked you out inside? You felt completely unstable because of it? I know people who live in Los Angeles know what I'm talking about a few years back when there was that earthquake. Now listen, when all of a sudden you're not sure whether the floor is going to hold you up or the ceiling is going to stay up above you, nothing else matters. You can't function except to think about how you're going to survive. This becomes your primary need above all else. Because for most people, certainty equals survival. It's that important to our lives. You know, I said, this stuff started flowing through me. I began to realize, oh my gosh, no wonder I don't feel like myself. You know, I'm, for the first time in my life, I'm missing my certainty. You say, well, Tony, why would you miss your certainty? I mean, you're on such a roll. All these people responding to you. There are people flying in from 28 nations to hear what you have to say. That's got to make you feel like you're somewhat certain about what your life's. But you know what's interesting? I had a friend that I talked to who told me about this doctor that does these great measurements of all the organs in your body. And it was just a totally holistic thing. And he measures your body to find out the age of your organs. In other words, you might be chronologically, you might be 35 years old, but your liver might only be 25 years old because you've really done a good job. You haven't drunk a lot of alcohol, you haven't abused your body, or if you have been abusive, you might have a 50-year-old liver as an example. So I thought it was fascinating. I'm always looking at interesting ways of measuring and improving and so forth. So I went to see this guy. And so I did all these tests with him and everything else, and he said, God, your organs are in great shape and everything else, and he did some just standard blood tests and so forth. And then I just forgot about it because I had most of the measurements right there. And he said, boy, you're in an amazing level of health. You've got an amazing level of vitality. You know, your organs are in incredible shape. So I'm feeling really good about myself. And I don't think about it. I go on. I'm doing my stuff. And, you know, each day I get my messages and I look down and this doctor's called me. So I'm so busy. And so I asked my secretary, I said, would you please call him and tell him I'm really sorry. I can't get back to him. I'm really busy. But just send me the report and, you know, that'd be great. And so she calls him and tries to get back to him. And she says, he really says he needs to talk to you. You know, I said, well, just tell him I'm really sorry. I'm so busy, because I really was. So I said, you know, just ask him, please. You know, we can talk. Send me the report, and then we'll talk. Because, you know, it's not that important to me right now. I got so many other things I got to deal with. So sure enough, I get home that night, late at night. I don't know, 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. And there on my pool table is a message. And it's from my secretary. And it says, the doctor says it's an emergency. He must speak to you. He will not talk to me personally. He said, it's an emergency. And I thought, what? And at first I got mad because you know what? I thought, what kind of message is that to leave for somebody? And there was no phone number, so I couldn't call him because it was 11 o'clock, 10:45, 11 o'clock at night. So I was mad at my secretary. I was mad at the doctor. I was mad at all the stuff. And then my brain went, oh my God, what could it be? What could it be? All of a sudden, what? Uncertain. I thought, oh, that's nothing. It's nothing. And I thought, well, what's the worst that can happen? Worst that can happen would be cancer. Tons of people I've seen have had cancer. I've talked to people. I've watched people. I know why they turn around, see people eliminate from their body, and I wouldn't have cancer. Maybe I was exposed to something, you know, radiation. Maybe I was exposed. My words are going through my head a million miles a minute, right? And all of a sudden, I got uncertainty. So I get on the phone with the doctor the next day. And by the way, I said, I'm not going to freak out about this. There's nothing freaking until I know what it is. Maybe, you know, I don't know what it is. Maybe he wants a ticket to a seminar. Who knows, you know? So sure enough, I get a hold of him the next day. And he says, I need to speak to you. I got him on the phone. I said, well, I'm here. That's why I'm talking to the phone. He goes, oh, I should speak to you in person. I said, I cannot come up to L.A. I need to speak right here and now on the phone. Whatever it is, tell me what it is. Whatever you think it is. What's the deal? I said, I didn't come to you because I was ill. I was healthy. I came to you to see how healthy I was. He said, yeah, but I did this blood test on you. And he said, I have to tell you something, Tony. You have an immense amount of growth hormone in your body. I said, when did you get your first clue? You know, no kidding, Dick Tracy. He said, no. He said, you don't understand. He said, you have a tumor in your pituitary gland. I said, excuse me? He said, you have a pituitary tumor. He said, I don't know that it's cancerous, but it's there, and it's stimulating your body to excrete all this growth hormone. I said, wait a second. I've been this big since I was 17 years old. I said, sophomore in high school, I was 5'1". I grew 10 inches in a year. He said, Tony, you have so much growth hormone in your body, you have this disease, and he gave me this wonderful label. And I said, hold it. Because fortunately, you know, if you listen to the tape on certainty and uncertainty, I've learned not to get too certain too quick about anything, to get many opinions before I make a decision. I said, hold it. How do you know this? He said, well, this blood test, and it has all this growth hormone. You have this much growth hormone, it means this. I said, so you don't actually know for certain that this is true, but you're telling me. He said, listen, I'm telling you, you have one, and we need to get you in here right away. He said, I think we're going to have to do surgery. I said, surgery? Surgery on what? He said, surgery on your brain. So you're going to do surgery on my brain based on one blood test? I said, are you crazy? And I started going nuts. He said, you got to take this seriously. You can't be in denial. I said, listen, I'm not in denial. I want all the facts, but I want the facts. I said, explain to me this test. He said, well, I can't explain. It's too complex. I said, try me. I'm a pretty intelligent guy. Walk me through it. I was getting madder and madder, right? Because I felt like he's like giving me the voodoo curse. And he said, well, I can't explain it to you. I don't thoroughly understand it myself. It's a new test. I said, you don't thoroughly understand. I'm managing myself. I'm like starting to get you where I'm going to scream at this guy, right? And at the same time, I want to hear what he has to say. So long story short, you might guess what this did to me. I thought, he's crazy. He's insane. And my brain goes, what if he's not? And for the first time that I can remember since I made the changes I made almost 15 years ago, I felt this emotion of uncertainty and a scary level, like uncertain whether or not I'm going to live a full and long life. And I was like battling in my head, and I really have a great deal of pride of how I control my focus, and I did a really good job, but I had my moments where it would pop back in. I thought, this is crap. I said, send me all the material. I want to read everything about it. I'm going to study everything about this and read it for myself. But you know what? I started reading all this stuff, and guess what? Have you ever read about doctors, for example, when they're med school? They start studying a disease, and sure enough, they find that they have all the symptoms. You start manifesting them. So I say, oh, I don't even want to read this because I'm starting to create all these things in my head. I got to be so careful here. Plus, I got to go on the road. I'm not going to buy into this. So I went on the road to the south of France. And that's where this all started. And that's where all this sense of uncertainty was. The end of the story is I certainly got a lot of variety in my life from this, as you might guess. I met a variety of doctors, and they all tried to tell me how significant and unique I was with this problem that I had. But I didn't buy into all that, and it literally took me traveling around the world to get to 5 doctors before I finally got to someone who made sense to me and who could prove to me beyond a shadow of a doubt what I really believed, which was I was fine. I went and did an MRI, and I said, I don't want to put anything into my brain. I don't want to put any radioactive dye into my brain. I got nothing wrong now. We stick that in there, I'll have a real problem. So he said, okay, well, we have this non-radioactive stuff that'll make the picture show up better. He said, I'm on your side. I agree. We overtest. I agree some of the tests are invasive and create problems. He was a great doctor. He said, but when you go do the MRI, he said, if they see an abnormality, so we can see exactly what it is, when they roll you back out, they'll give you this stuff that's non-radioactive, but it'll make it show up. And I said, all right, on that circumstance only. So I got put in this MRI. You want to talk about uncertainty? This bill, this thing's shaking like crazy. You feel like I'm a little coffin being pushed in. I hope you've never had to have the experience. And sure enough, I'm in there for I don't know how long. The thing slides out. I'm ready to get off, and the guy says, don't get off. He said, we have to give you something. I said I wasn't going to take that. He said, you said you weren't going to take it unless there was an abnormality, and there is one. And I lay back down on the slab, and they push me back in the machine. And that's when you really have to practice everything you've learned, which I did. I said, I'm not going to get upset until I know exactly what it is, and whatever it is, I develop certainty by my faith. My faith that I'm here for a reason, I got a purpose, and whatever it is, I can figure a solution, I can make it happen. And if not, then I'm going to make sure however long I'm here, that I maximize it. I've done a pretty good job of that so far, I'll continue to do it. So I came back out, and then I had to wait half a day to find out what it meant. The doctor got me on the phone, and I said, so what's the deal? And he said, well, it's true, you've had a pituitary tumor, and he said, that's why you grew 10 inches in a year, because it put this pressure on your pituitary gland and released all this growth hormone, and that's why you exploded in growth. That's why you have these huge hands, huge feet, and that's why you exploded in size. But he said, but then the tumor infarcated on itself. Horrible term, infarcated, right? But I said, what does that mean? He said, it collapsed in on itself. It literally starved itself and disappeared. You're fine. There's a little tiny spot in there. He said that it could do something maybe. He said, you know, maybe we ought to operate, do it. I said, wait a second, maybe I ought to operate. I said, do I have any symptoms? He said, no, nothing else shows that you've got any problem. I said, well, this must have happened 17 years ago. He goes, yeah, but, you know, just to be safe, you might want to go in and do something. So just go in there and, you know, cut it out just so you can feel certain that you don't have to worry about it. I said, I'm a lot more uncertain about you opening up my brain and messing with my pituitary gland. And so he was a really nice doctor, and he said, well, you know, you really consider. He said, the other thing you could do is you could take these drugs. And he said, these drugs will. I said, well, what are the side effects? And one of the side effects of the drugs is it makes you feel like you're sedated. And he said, you just take them for the rest of your life. I said, can you imagine me being sedated? I said, here's a power. Welcome to Power Dog. My gosh. So the bottom line is I went to another doctor, and the next doctor said he wanted to cut me open. I went through the whole thing. He said, yeah, but you can't take a chance. I said, why don't we just monitor it? But they kept saying, but, you know, even though it's infarcated, you have this high level of growth hormone in your body. And, you know, it's so high. It's at this huge level. And I forget what the ratio was they told me back then. But it's like, you know, 300% higher or 400% higher than other people. I said, well, I know people that are taking growth hormone, you know, so they get great muscles because it makes you young and keeps you energetic and keeps you strong. I said, well, yeah. I said, so looks like I got about $500 a day with the growth hormone here. Why would I get rid of that? Doctor started laughing. He said, well, you got to take this seriously. I said, well, let's look. What would that do? He said, well, if it was out of control, your heart valves would get bigger. So we did the scan. My heart valves were fine. Went through all these things. He said, well, you still, just to be certain, you should just do this. Because after all, if you take the drugs, then you can be certain. If you have the surgery, you can be certain. I said, listen, I got my own certainty. That's what it would take you to be certain. And in the midst of all these things, I had tremendous uncertainty until I finally got it resolved by meeting with this one doctor at the end. And I was his last patient. He's 75 years old, genius doctor. He's one of the fathers of this study of pituitary. And I kept asking all these doctors, is it possible that because I put myself in this incredibly intense state, that by doing that, just like I know I can fire off my adrenal glands, I'm firing off growth hormone? And he said, absolutely. No one else, no other doctor in the whole country could tell me that. He said, Tony, the way you live stimulates growth hormone because of the demand you make. He said, listen, we've got people in their 70s and 80s who we're doing weight training with, both men and women. I said, don't tell me. I've read the stories. I've read the articles. I said, you know, what it's doing is the demand they're making is causing growth hormone to be released, and it's keeping them young, and they're developing the same strength as 30-year-olds. He said, that's absolutely right. Only it's not only 30-year-olds, but as strong as 20 and 30-year-old men and women, people in their 70s and 80s. He said, you got a great gift. He said, but Tony, you know, he said, I got to tell you something. He said, I'm into drugs. So he said, what I would suggest is drug you just to be safe. He said, if you go to a baker, they're going to bake. You go to a surgeon, they're going to want to cut you. You go to me, I want to drug you. He said, but you're pretty clear about what you want to do. He said, listen, if you just want to monitor this, he said, it's probably been 17 years. It's probably just totally fine. There seems to be no side effect in your body whatsoever. But if you want the drugs, he said, you know, I'd be happy to give them to you because it's something just to add certainty. I said, I'd much rather just monitor and see if there's any problem here. So I'm fine. But I'll tell you what, it took me forever. And you know what? It took me one more reference, and that was I had visited with Deepak Chopra, who's one of the most brilliant people I know in the world, and he's an endocrinologist. Why I didn't start with him, I'm not quite sure. I guess because I was off into the spiritual realm in the gap and not thought to go see him. But I talked to him, and he said, Tony, let me look at your levels. And he showed me the ratio. He said, Tony, he said, I've been an endocrinologist for 25 years. I got to tell you something. Anybody with this ratio, he said, this ratio is not extraordinary. I would never do surgery on somebody with this ratio. I would never give drugs to somebody with this ratio. He said, there are people the ratio 5 to 10 times this. And then we consider doing surgery. I said, everybody else is telling me I'm nuts if I got it. He said, Tony, there's natural variation. He said, this is probably just in the natural variation for your body. So finally, combination of new references, I was finally able to get certain again. And I've gone back now, and it's been 18 months, and had everything measured. Nothing has changed. I'm totally fine. But it took all that time to get there. But after a few people, I finally decided to enter not only getting evidence, but also a little bit of faith. Because you know what? You can be scared about crossing the street, and then you won't do anything there either. But I got to tell you something. I now know what it means not to have certainty, and it makes me appreciate what people are going through when they feel that level of uncertainty. It is a need. And if it's taken away, it's difficult. And by the way, no one can take it away. I took it away from myself. I could blame the doctor all day long. He's just trying to help me. He's doing what he knows best. He's doing what he's trained to do. But what I did is I started to create all these questions. And by the way, it's useful sometimes. I had to get the answer to the questions. That would be stupid just to say, oh, I'm certain and not look at it, not investigate. But it's equally stupid to keep asking a question forever, because if you keep asking a question, you're going to doubt it. If you say, well, what if I screw up? What if I don't follow through? You're going to create uncertainty and doubt. Not because there's something to doubt, but because asking about something over and over again creates the doubt. So if you want to have certainty, I'll tell you one of the biggest skills, getting quality information, getting multiple opinions, but I'll tell you the other thing that'll give you certainty, and that is making certain that you apply some of your faith as well. It's still the ultimate power. So think about this for a moment. If we have a need for certainty, how do we meet it? How do we meet that need? And then you begin to understand the second part of understanding how to make your life work. We all have the same needs, but we've all developed different vehicles, different ways of meeting those needs. Now, what the heck is a vehicle? A vehicle is anything you use as a tool to meet your emotional need, to meet this deep need for certainty. So, for example, how would one get a sense of certainty in their life if they really needed it? Well, there are lots of ways. What some people do when their whole life is in a terrible shape and they don't know what to do and they're feeling tremendous uncertainty at work and they don't know what's going to happen, they don't know if the company's going to downsize or right-size. I mean, look at the world we're in. Boy, you talk about a need for certainty. The world used to be really predictable, but it isn't anymore. We don't know. At any moment, something can change because information is happening so rapidly. Change is happening more rapidly at any time in life, so it's hard to predict what's going to happen. So, boy, this need for certainty gets even stronger. So what do you do in the midst of all this stuff? You grab something that'll make you feel certain you can be comfortable, because that's really what we're talking about. You might think of this need as certainty slash comfort. That's really what the need is. And I'll tell you what most people do, reach for some food. That's right, I'm all stressed out. Go eat something. Yeah, now I can be comfortable. All that food slams into my stomach. I start to breathe again. Hey, I'm certain I'm going to survive. There's food in there. We don't realize it, but it's just a way we know we can predict will make us comfortable. Other people are not into their food. No, they're more type A types. No, the way they get certain is go fix that desk. Yes, they got this $8 billion decision. They'll just put that aside because that's too tough. What they do is organize their desk, gives them a sense of control. With a sense of control, we feel what? Certain. Take a look. My desk is all nice now. It only took me 4 hours. I got to avoid the big decision that I was uncertain about. Do something I'm very certain. I am certain I can be competent in organizing my desk. I feel so much better. But it hasn't solved the real problem. Some people do it by controlling other people. If I can get you to do all the things I want you to do at any moment, then obviously I'm in control. If I have control, then I don't have to worry about how you're going to respond. I know how you're going to respond to me. I have no uncertainty. I can predict your response because I'm in control of it. The problem with this particular vehicle for getting certainty and comfort, it violates another need we have for love, for connection. But we'll get to that. The point of the matter is, some people, as a vehicle to get certainty, knowing how important is their lives, what they do is they create a negative identity for themselves. What do I mean? Well, have you ever done something or watched somebody, because I'm sure you've never done this, but have you ever watched somebody else like disappoint themselves time after time? And then what do? They adapt. For example, let's say somebody procrastinates over and over again, and they really try to achieve something, but they procrastinate, really try to achieve, and they procrastinate, and they're disappointed with themselves. Here's the simple way to get around it. All you got to do is say, you know what? I'm just a procrastinator. That's just who I am. Guess what that gives you? Certainty. Certainty that in the future you won't follow through, so you feel comfortable with it. So rather than being disappointed with yourself and upset and wondering whether you're going to follow through or not, you can at least predict it. Some people try consistency as a way to be certain. In other words, if I can just do the same thing today and the same thing tomorrow and I have the same basic regimen, then I can predict my life. I can predict my life. I have certainty. But again, the problem with that is the world is changing too rapidly. If you do the same thing day after day after day in business, you won't be in business years from now because somebody else is going to come by and do it better. They're going to use that little concept called constant, never-ending improvement. Can I? They're going to innovate, and you're going to be in the dust. So that old approach to prediction by consistency, it just doesn't work. The world is changing too fast. Now, what are some positive ways? And by the way, on these vehicles, think of it this way. Some vehicles are neutral. What I mean by neutral is, you know, they meet your need, but they don't really improve your life. Some vehicles are destructive. I mean, they flat mess your life up if you use that vehicle. But the problem is you can go eat like crazy and feel comfortable each time you eat. But you're violating other needs you have in your life. But it's seductive. Are you following me on this? I know I'm kind of early in the discussion, but please catch this with me. In other words, sometimes we do something that doesn't really serve us, but it feels good, but it's not good for us. And it feels good in the moment because it meets one of our needs. For something to be a class one experience, it needs to meet all of our needs, or at least the vast majority of them. Now, what are some positive vehicles we could utilize in this concept of getting certainty? Because we all need it. It's not a question of whether we need it or not. It is an absolute need. Well, I can tell you one of the most powerful ones is to create a positive identity for yourself. To say, you know what? Instead of getting all worried, and by the way, what is worry? It's uncertainty, isn't it? You're worried it's not going to work out. You're worried this is going to happen. You're worried that's going to happen. Oh my gosh, what if this doesn't work? What if that doesn't work? It's a horrible state to be in. Here's the antidote to worry. Just being willing to decide that your vehicle for certainty is you're going to have faith. As I started to say, my core belief that's got me through some of the toughest times of my life is I really believe that I am guided. And I'm not telling you what to believe spiritually in any way, shape, or form. I respect whatever you believe. But whatever you believe, no matter what religion in the world we speak about, every religion talks about the power of belief, or specifically faith. That absolute certainty that comes from nowhere except that you decide to have it. And we forget we have that skill. In fact, I did a whole power talk years ago on faith. I hope you'll listen to it again if you haven't listened to it recently. But I'm telling you, another way is just to have a positive identity for yourself. I mean, for me, I have been through so many things in my life, and I'm sure you have too. We've all been through trying times, times when it looked so bad, times when it looked like it would never turn around, times when it looked like, you know, everything was against you, when winter looked like it was going to last forever, when it seemed like there would never be a daytime, it was always going to be night. You've had those kinds of times in your life, haven't you? I know I have. But you know what's pulled me through is now at the age of 35, I've lived enough life, and I'm still a baby. I'm still a youngster in life. But I've lived enough life, I have enough experience that I can look back, and if you're smart, you can do this too. You can say, you know what? I've been through everything you can imagine. Whatever you throw at me, I always find a way to turn it around. I've got so many experiences when it seemed like nothing could work, and I found my way through it. Or I hung out long enough till it turned around. You know, the season does change. You know, it doesn't stay winter forever, even if you don't do very much. But if you get better, somehow it tends to affect your personal emotional seasons at least. And it certainly has worked that way for me. So what I can tell you is there are a lot of positive ways to have certainty. You know, you can have certainty because you know that you're a giver. And since you're always giving, you don't have to worry about will you be taken care of. You believe in karma, or you believe in the concept of what you put out comes back tenfold. These philosophies, these belief systems will give you certainty. But how do most people try to get certainty? They use an artificial vehicle, and that's why they live in fear. They think that if they have enough money, they'll be certain. But see, no matter how much money you have, as soon as you get a lot of money, then you worry, well, you know, what if somebody takes it? What if they tax it? You know, what if somebody sues me? You know, then you got all those worries. So you still don't have certainty. Some people say, well, once I get a relationship with somebody I really care about, then I'll be certain. Then I'll be comfortable. Then I'll finally have that sense of pleasure. Because that's what we're really talking about. Certainty you can be comfortable. Certainty you can have pleasure and not pain. But sure enough, when you start interacting with another human being, guess what? You're going to have a lot more pleasure and you're going to have moments, at least moments, where there may be a little bit of pain. Because human beings have conflicts that show up. It's part of being a human being. It's part of what makes us grow. So there are lots of ways to meet this need. But here's the real caveat. Here's where the real problem comes in. Let me ask you a question. What happens when you get totally certain? Well, the first thing happens, you feel confident, don't you? Yes, indeed. I feel pretty strong. I'm pretty good at this. And then after a while, when you absolutely can predict what's going to happen, you know, when this happens, that occurs. You can just predict it. When you have total, complete certainty, what happens? Well, you lose your edge, right? Because suddenly you think you just know it, so you don't grow as much. But there's another phase beyond that. If you're totally able to predict, all right, you know, let's say your spouse, I know what he's going to say again. I know what, every time we go there, she says this. Every time we go there, he says that. I know, oh, you know, then he'll say this. Then she'll say that. What happens? What emotion do you feel when you're totally certain all the time? That's right. Boredom. Right? Boredom. Let me tell you something. The bottom line is, that when we're bored, we're unhappy, we're unfulfilled. We've got to be able to break through boredom. So guess what we do? The reason, and by the way, I want to make sure I'm clear about this. When you totally satiate a need, you get unhappy. And here's the killer. The killer is that you have a second need that is directly in conflict with this first need. But see, that's the paradox. Because here's the second need, the second human need, the second goal of life is simply this. You need uncertainty. That's right. You need uncertainty. You need it. You don't just want it. You don't desire it. You may try to avoid it, but you need it. All human beings need uncertainty slash variety, to give you another word. Because everyone, coming from our background, we have different linguistic representations. All that means is different words to represent what feelings mean to us. So when I say for you uncertainty or variety, you might substitute another word in your mind, like we all have a need for surprise. That's another way of describing uncertainty or variety. Or we all have a need for diversity or challenge or difference. I mean, this is where the excitement of life comes from. Certainty can give you that comfort, right? Certainty can give you that sense of peace. But see, if you just sit around in peace all the time, you're one bored sucker. You don't know what's going to happen. And I'll tell you something. This man who was inviting me to come see him, who I was in the shower thinking about, who wanted me to coach him, he had everything in life he could imagine. He had two daughters that totally love and adore him, think he's the greatest thing on earth. He has a person in his life who will take care of everything, his right arm. All he has to do is say, I want this, and it occurs. He's got homes all over the world. In fact, he had just won this big award because his home had one of the finest or the finest home in the south of France, the finest garden in the south of France. You know, he has this amazing yacht. He has more money than he can spend in his entire lifetime. And guess what? He was totally depressed. Why? 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 I mean, here's this man's got all his dreams, and he's depressed. Because he was so certain he knew what was going to happen, when it was going to happen, how it was going to happen. I mean, he had no surprise in his life, no challenge. Nothing he's uncertain about. He was working so hard because his whole goal, he said, Tony, I just want to be at peace. I just want to be at peace all the time. He said, and I don't know what it is. I had a hard time being at peace. Well, guess what? You're never going to be at peace because you're not designed to be at peace. If you want to be at peace, go get dead. That's dead. Dead equals peace. Right? Life is movement. Life is emotion. Life is feeling. And guess what? Our Creator was smart enough to give us needs that appear to be in conflict but actually serve us. We have a need for certainty, and simultaneously we have a need for uncertainty. And that is a paradox. Do you remember what paradox means? Paradox simply means you have two things that appear to be in conflict, but they actually are complementary. They serve us. And I'll show you how it works if you're smart, if you know what to look for, if you pay attention to what I'm talking about right now. Because here's what you do. Think about it. How do we get this sense of uncertainty in a positive sense? We just said we don't want to be totally uncertain, but we don't want to be totally certain either. Either one of those is a terrible place. If you're totally uncertain, you're freaked out. If you're totally certain, you're bored. And I'll give you a quick example. Think about this. How do you get that sense of variety in your life? And when is it triggered? Let's take a context. Let's look at relationships for a moment. So let's say in the very beginning in a relationship, what are you looking for? Well, you're looking for a lot of things. And I'm not going to mention them all because they meet some of these other human needs. And I want to keep you in a little bit of suspense and not confuse you. So let's just look at one need. Part of what you want is you want certainty that this person is somebody who really cares about you, right? This is somebody who really loves you. This is somebody that you can depend on if you're going to be in a relationship. This is somebody that you're going to be stimulated by mentally, emotionally, psychologically, sexually, you know, every sense of your life. So, but what happens when you're totally certain in a relationship? What happens? You get bored. So then what do people do? Well, they have a need for uncertainty. So I'll tell you, they do one of several things. Suddenly they find that uncertainty, that variety, that challenge in their work. And the person says, why aren't they home with me anymore? Because there isn't the same level of variety. There isn't the same stimulation. Or they finally decide this is the wrong person for me, and they leave that person. They say, it's just the wrong relationship. It's boring. It's not stimulating anymore. It's not growing. I need more variety in my life, so I'm going to go out with somebody else. Goodbye, our relationship's over. Or the person may cheat on this person. In fact, here was one of the big questions I've had over the last 4 or 5 years, especially A Date with Destiny. Because I've realized throughout the years that what controls human behavior is our beliefs and our values. And I would see people, and I'd read, and they'd share with me their personal lives, and I'd see this person as really a good human being with really high standards for themselves, really high values as an example. And I'd read about this woman, and she'd be cheating on her husband. And I'd be thinking, but this is totally in conflict with her values. How could this be? And then it became obvious when I understood the six human needs. She was very comfortable with him. But she had no surprise. There was no challenge. There was no creation. There was no uncertainty there. And she wanted it so bad. So she chose a poor vehicle. And as a result, now here she's in this. And she felt bad about it. But you know what's interesting? People will violate their values to meet their needs. It's not a good thing. If you pick the wrong vehicle, it creates more pain. It becomes one of those experiences that feels good, but isn't good for you, isn't good for others, doesn't serve the greater good. So you have to be careful of those. It's so easy to get seduced. I know I've been seduced by situations in my life, food, situations that didn't make sense. We all can relate to that. But what you got to realize, okay, what need am I trying to meet? And let's see if I can meet that need in a more productive way. So coming back to the example of relationships, so some people get it out of their work now and then the relationship suffers. Some people do it by way of leaving the relationship. Some people do it by way of cheating. Some people do it by just saying, I won't be in a relationship. I'll find it from some other area of my life completely. But you have to understand, all this is just the drive to meet two needs. I'll give you an example. I was doing the seminar right after I came up with these distinctions in the south of France. And this one woman from England, before I described these six human needs, raised her hand. She said, I'll tell you my problem. My problem is men. I said, okay, what's the challenge? She said, well, she goes, how come men are such bastards? And I said, bastards? She said, bastards. And I said, what do you mean? She said, well, you know, the really nice men, the really good men. She said, you know, you get with them in the beginning and it's very nice. It's very wonderful. It's very warm. But after a while, they're so damn boring. She goes, then finally you leave them and you go for these very exciting men. They're so stimulating. They're so amazing. You never know what they're going to do. He said, they're, you know, they're sexy and they do things you wouldn't predict. And it's just amazing. She goes, but they're bastards. They're such bastards. That finally you can't take it anymore. So she goes, you go back to the really nice men, you know, and then you get bored again. Then you go back to the bastards. Then you go back to the nice men. Then you go back to the bastards. I said, stop. I said, I think I understand. She was experiencing the human paradox. The paradox of trying to meet two needs that appear to be in conflict. Certainty and uncertainty, but there is a way to meet them both, and we're going to discuss how to do that. So it's not just limited to relationship. Relationship is one vehicle for creating both certainty and uncertainty simultaneously, and anybody who's been in a relationship has probably experienced both of those emotions. But let's go back to uncertainty slash variety, that second need for a moment, and let's discuss just briefly a list of potential vehicles for creating these feelings. Let's take a look at some of the things you do day to day to try and meet these needs. I'll give you a classic example. Why do you go to a movie? Why do you go to a sporting event? Variety, surprise, uncertainty. You're not sure. I mean, if you knew exactly how the game was going to go and you could predict who was going to hit what at what time and you knew exactly who was going to win or lose, do you think you'd really go? Maybe if you're really craving certainty, I guess. But usually most of us go for the variety, for the surprise. Why do you go to a movie? Because you know that the hero's not going to get killed. You're certain that in the end, at least you won't get killed. But in the meantime, you get to vicariously have their uncertainty, the uncertainty of the character. In fact, don't you usually get mad when in the end they hurt the person you knew couldn't be hurt? Right? Because it took away something you were counting on sometimes. Think about it. Have you ever gone to a video store and rented a video? Of course you have. Have you ever rented a video of a film you've already seen? I bet you have. Why? Why would you rent a video you've already seen? Well, the answer is obvious. You're certain it's going to feel good. And you're also hoping you've forgotten enough that maybe there'll be some variety for you there. See, that's the bottom line. Now, what are some of the other sources? Well, some people use alcohol. I mean, culturally, we reinforce this idea that alcohol is a way to instantly create a change. Because think about it. When we talk about variety or uncertainty, we're talking about a state change. We're talking about changing the way we feel. And when you drink alcohol, or if you take a drug, you have an instant change in your biochemistry. You have an instant radical change in your state. But I want to remind you of something. These are destructive ways of meeting your needs. They may meet your needs in the short term, but they'll cost you in the long term. These are class 3 experiences. They feel good in the short term, but they aren't good for you. They don't serve other people, and they don't serve the greater good. And it's so easy to get seduced into these vehicles. But I want to tell you something. The reason we don't give them up is because they meet some of our needs. But I want you to think about your needs in one more distinction. Think of each one of these needs on a 0 to 10 scale, where 0 is no fulfillment and 10 is total fulfillment. You know, by drinking alcohol, for example, you might feel a sense of variety, a change of state, that on a scale from 0 to 10 might feel as good as a level 3. But it's not totally fulfilling, is it? Because it's going to bite you the next morning, and you know it. So it's not totally fulfilling. Unlike something where you know there's no downside, it only feels good. Those tend to give you a level 9 or 10. So one of the seductions in life, as I mentioned, is that very often we want to make a change. And we say, why can't I get myself to change? Why can't I get myself to stop overeating? Well, I'll tell you one reason. Because right now, you perceive that eating gives you certainty you can be comfortable, and it gives you variety. Or you perceive that doing drugs or using alcohol, you're certain it'll give you a change of state, a surprise, a variety. So it's very difficult when it's meeting some of your needs, but it doesn't meet all of them. And part of what I'm going to show you how to do in this tape is to develop some new patterns of fulfillment. So you don't just get rid of something. If you ever try to stop smoking, and smoking used to make you comfortable. Smoking when you're bored gave you something to do, gave you some variety, some distraction. If you don't find a new vehicle that's just as easy to use, that'll give you that comfort and variety right away, then you're going to go back to smoking. You're going to go back to drinking. That's obvious. That's the biggest problem. Discipline never works because discipline says, I'm not going to do this vehicle anymore. But discipline's not enough because if you don't replace the vacuum, your needs still have to be met. So you go back to the old vehicle you know works. Doesn't work perfectly, doesn't work well, but it works enough that you're going to keep doing it. I mean, does that make sense to you? What else do people do? I'll tell you, in relationships with some people do, things get so certain, they pick a fight. Because guess what? You know, this relationship's too predictable. It's too good. Let's do something here, create a little variety in here. They don't do it consciously, but they do it unconsciously just to get some difference going. Now, some people just go get a new relationship for variety, or they go get a new job, or they get a new location to live in. But you know, the problem with all these is they don't last.